because this is a good conversation.
This is a good conversation. We were just discussing my name.
Yeah, because you said Alicia.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been called a little bit of everything, but yeah, sure.
I've only ever been called Sarah.
Alicia.
But let me tell you something. There's a name that
it's Alicia, guys.
It is Alicia. There's a name that I dislike, and it's not for the humans that are named this. I don't like the name Alicia. A-L-E-S-S-I-A. And I'll tell you why. Because I never know if it's Alessia, Alicia, or any other pronunciation, because I have two friends. Both of their daughters are named this, and they are said completely different.
Did you see, it's been forever ago now, where the kid had, or the lady had named her kid Absidy, and it was spelled A-B-C-D-E?
I have seen that.
Why would you do that? You are setting them up for failure.
I don't know.
And then they got mad and wanted to try to sue the airport because the airport was laughing at the name. Because they thought it was an error. They thought, like,
somebody imagine ABCDE.
Yeah, imagine you're a ticket agent mm-hmm. and somebody brings you the ticket and you look at it and it's saying ABCDE. I would think it was an error too. I would like, they need to go fix it and put the name on it. I'm going to need you to take it back. And then for them to look you dead in the eye and tell you the baby's name is Absidy, ABCDE. Why? Why are you going to do them like that? Because you know they're getting made fun of. Right. They might as well adjust because that ain't going to be the first or the last time they get made fun of.
Well, speaking about funny names, don't ever ask Lewis if we ever had a kid. Don't let him name my baby. Like, if I'm out cold for whatever reason, I give birth and he's asked to name the child, don't let him do it. I'll give you a list of names you can pick from, okay? Because he would be out here naming our baby Nebuchadnezzar. That is his ideal baby name.
Nebuchadnezzar.
And he goes, it's a nice name. He goes, nobody can really make fun of it. I was like, okay, Nebulizer. Like, what are you talking about? I'm like, kids are mean. Nope, he would definitely look me dead in the eye.
Kids are mean.
He would look me dead in the eye and be like, Nebuchadnezzar's a good name.
I can tell you kids are mean because my niece makes me want to cry sometimes. So kids are mean. They're bullies.
You know who else is mean? The elderly.
Oh, yeah. Old people don't care. I can tell you right now, when I get old, I already told Scott. Go ahead. Y'all put me in a nursing home. I promise you're going to get a call every day. Because when I get old and I go in a nursing home, I got nothing to lose.
Nope. Okay? I lived my life. What are you going to do? Kill me?
Like, I'm going to show out. They are going to know who I am. They will know me by first, middle, and last name.
I forgot your middle name.
That's all right.
No, wait. I know it. I'm not going to say it. I might say it.
Anyway.
Why don't I know it?
I already told Scott, when I get old and go into a nursing home, if they put me in a nursing home, going down, they're going to get calls daily. I mean, not him. I guess Ethan would. But that's okay, because Ethan will pick the nursing home. I tell Scott all the time, he better be good to Ethan.
Mouth it to me. Oh, that's what I was going to say. Okay. I was going to say that. No, not one of my friends named Alicia. You all spell your first name the same. Not one of you has the same middle name.
Technically, now it's Terry. Legally, on paperwork.
Well, yeah. Because you're Southern. Because you're Southern. That's a thing that people do in the South. That's not something that I've ever known people to do, but that's a thing here.
What?
You drop your middle name and make your maiden name.
What do they do up north? You just drop the last name?
You just change it. Or you hyphenate it. Like, my last name is Cerace. My middle name didn't change. I didn't put my maiden name as my middle name.
Yeah.
My name is just Sarah Elizabeth Cerace. Google that, because there's more than one Sarah Cerace in the world, so... Find it if you
Google me.
But those of you that are friends with me on Facebook that are from here, you know what my maiden name is. But yeah, it's just like a thing down here. Like, I guess some people will do it up north, but it's not common. But here, everyone does it.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not judging. I just didn't know that that was like a common thing until I started seeing like Kelly did it. Summer did it. Casey did it. Like a bunch of people. You did it.
I did it. My mom did it.
Yeah, it's just not something that we... It's not impossible, it's just not something we do. Like, you either take your spouse's last name or... And I say spouse because I've never seen it happen, but I'm sure men have taken their wives' names instead, because what if you have, like, a really tragic last name? I'd want to get rid of it.
Fun fact! So, my dad's grandfather,
mm-hmm.
his last name was Tiddy. T-I-D-D-Y.
Diddy?
T-I-D-D-Y. Okay. So, Titty. That was how it was pronounced.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he went and to join the military, he changed his last name to Teddy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was Teddy. Then when their mom was born, her name was, her last name obviously was Teddy, but then she got married and she married a Terry. So she literally only had to change two letters of her last name.
That's crazy.
But his last name originally was Titty. T-I-D-D-Y. Titty. Could you imagine?
No.
I mean, nowadays especially. Maybe not some, but they still made fun of him apparently because that's why he changed it.
That's interesting.
So, long story short now, I'm going to get on with it.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. I'm Sarah.
Hi, I'm Alicia.
And this is
Sinister State. So, we've discussed names and random weird things, nursing homes and all that.
Oh, yeah.
But we're back to Rhode Island, baby.
The littlest state
ever, apparently.
Well, I guess Washington, D.C., it's not a state, but it would be considered the smallest. It's not an actual state.
I bet there's a lot more crime going on there than there is in Rhode Island.
Crime and corruption.
Right. So, that's what I'm saying. Count it all as one. Because I don't trust nobody there.
This is facts.
Okay. So our missing person is Katrina McVeigh. She's been missing since May 3rd, 1992. From Woonsocket, Rhode Island.
Okay. Okay.
I think I did pretty good.
That sounds right. I don't think I've ever heard that word said, though.
Yep. So, she is a 27-year-old white female. At the time, she was 5'1 and 90 pounds. Lord, she was teeny tiny.
Mm-hmm.
To be 27. Her distinguishing characteristics was she was a Caucasian female with brown hair. Her ears are pierced. For the details of her disappearance, she was last seen getting into a car near Front and Lincoln Streets in Woonsocket, Rhode Island on May 3rd, 1992. She was involved in drugs and prostitution at the time of her disappearance, and she had just left her husband, which was an abusive relationship, and she's never been heard from again. Her family didn't report her missing until June 17th, 6 weeks later. She has three children, but she didn't have custody of them at the time of her disappearance. Her last address was known to be around the 200 block of 2nd Avenue. Foul play is suspected in her case. Investigators do believe she is deceased. They have identified persons of interest, but no one has been charged in connection with her disappearance. Several other women have disappeared or been murdered in Woonsocket since she disappeared. Audrey Harris disappeared in 2003 and Christine Dumont in 2004. The serial killer Jeffrey S. Malhot later pled guilty to their murders, but their bodies have never been found. In 2012, Michael Ducharme pled guilty.
Ducharme. That's my dad's best friend's last name. That's the only reason I'm correcting you. Okay. I'm Ducharme. Pretty sure that's how it's said.
Yeah, it's D-U-C-H-A-R-M-E.
Yeah, Ducharme.
I've never heard that last name, so yeah. I learned something this time. He pled guilty to Vicki Connolly's murder. She was killed in 2007. The homicides of Megan Paul, who was killed in 1994, and Cindy Roberts, who was killed in 2001. Their cases are currently still remain unsolved. So there's still three other women that are potential victims.
Wow.
Like McVeigh, Paul was involved in drugs and prostitution, but it hasn't been proven that the two cases are related. McVeigh's family believes she was murdered by someone close to her and then buried on the banks of the Blackstone River. Her brother searched that area and found what he believed to be some of her clothes. After her disappearance, her mother got anonymous phone calls from someone saying that she would never find her daughter, and her case still remains unsolved to this day. So, yeah. So, if you know anything about it, I mean, 1992, that's a long time ago. Let's give this family some closure if you know something.
Yeah.
This is not kids, because there wasn't that many kids. I mean, there actually wasn't kids listed, really, as missing there. So, anyways, so our case for this week. Are we ready for it? Have you ever heard of Doris Duke?
No.
Okay. So
I feel like I would have known that name.
Okay, well, we're going to discuss Doris Duke and the death of Eduardo Torella.
What a nice name.
I know.
Torella. Reminds me of Fast and Furious, Dominic Toretto.
Yeah.
Torella. Sorry, that's just what it reminds me of. But no, I've never heard of any of this.
Okay, here we go. So Doris Duke was not just known for her immense wealth as an American tobacco heiress, but also for her diverse interests and philanthropic endeavors.
Nice.
Often referred to as the richest girl in the world, Duke's life was filled with luxury, passion, and a commitment to giving back to society. Beyond her extravagant lifestyle, Duke's interests were wide-ranged, from being a news correspondent at one point and to mastering a jazz piano, and even taking up competitive surfing. She was a woman of many talents. Her dedication to preserving historical buildings in Newport, Rhode Island, and creating a stunning botanical display in New Jersey showcased her love for art, culture, and heritage. Duke's friendship with Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, the former First Lady, was well known, and their collaboration on the Newport...
Wait. Their names were John and Jackie.
Mm-hmm. That just hit
J&J. Anyway, I guess I never put two and two together. Yep. I don't know why.
It's all good. And there's something with John.
That was literally my, like, WTF. Why didn't I know that moment for the day?
It's okay. So, Newport Restoration Foundation highlighted Duke's commitment to preserving history. So, she assisted with, like, AIDS research, child welfare, and she also helped support African-American students in the South that were affected by racism during the time. That's what it says. Mm-hmm. So even in her later years, she continued her charitable work, donating a significant portion of her fortune to various causes. Her legacy lives on through the Doris Duke Foundation, which focuses on medical research, preventing cruelty to children and animals, supporting the performing arts, and promoting wildlife conservation and ecology.
So she was like a big old, like, give back kind of person.
Duke's impact on society and her commitment to making a difference continue to inspire generations to this day. But.
Oh, there's always a but.
Yeah. So we're going to go a little bit into her life, her early life especially, just so we can better understand what's going to happen. So, Duke was a native of New York City.
Hey.
She was born November 22nd, 1912, as the only child to James Buchanan Duke, a prominent figure in the tobacco and hydroelectric power companies. You're not getting it, are you?
Duke Power. Duke Energy.
Right.
They're in some hot water, though.
And his second wife...
Them bills been coming in.
Right. And his second wife, Nanaline Inman. So, upon him passing in 1925, his will allocated the majority of his estate to his wife and daughter, in addition to $17 million designated for the Duke Endowment, a foundation which was established in 1924. The estate's total worth was estimated to be between $60 to $100 million.
This is in New York City?
This is in 1925. $60 to $100 million.
Wait.
So he was like, let me see how much.
Price. What's it called? The inflation calculator? What's it called?
I don't know.
How much in 1925
is $60 million today?
Hang on, there's like a word for this calculator.
There is.
You said 60 million?
60 to 100 million is what they were estimating, because they're not, you know. But this primarily stemmed from J.B. Duke's interest in the tobacco company.
Would you like to know?
Yes.
$60 million in 1925 is worth $1.57 million today.
$60 million is what?
Wait, did they not put the extra... Hang on. There's a missing thingy. Let's do 100.
Yeah.
Okay. Hundreds, thousands. Yeah. Am I blind? That's only $1 million, right?
Or is that a billion?
No, because that's a decimal point. So hundreds, hundred thousands. Oh, it's a billion.
Okay.
1.7 billion.
Okay.
My bad. I was looking at the wrong comments.
It's all good. So it was the American Tobacco Company and the precursor to the Duke Power Company, which is, hey, if you're in North and South Carolina, you know who Duke Power is. Yeah. They take all your money.
So isn't that the only power company here?
Yeah, there's some, like, subsidiaries, I think, like, that are, like, for instance, my mom, where she lives in Western North Carolina, she uses French Broad Electric, but they get theirs through Duke. Mm-hmm. They just buy power and resell it. I didn't know that was a thing, but apparently it is. Anyway, during her early years, Doris resided at Duke Farms, a sprawling 2,700-acre estate in Hillsborough Township, New Jersey, which had belonged to her father. Following his demise, a legal dispute arose in 1927 to halt the potential auctions and sale of his real estate holdings due to uncertainties in his will. Doris Duke took legal action against her mother and other executors, successfully preventing the sales from taking place. So she went up against her mama to be able to keep this place. Notably, one of the properties in question was a Grand Manhattan mansion situated at 1 East 78th Street, which was later repurposed as the headquarters for the Fine Institute of Arts at New York University. So at the age of 18 in 1930, she made her debut in society at a grand ball held at Rough Point, the family estate in Newport, Rhode Island. This marked a significant milestone in her life, and she was presented as a debutante to the world. As she reached the ages of 21, 25, and 30, she received substantial inheritances from her father's will, earning her the title of the world's richest girl. Her mother passed in 1962, and that left her with precious jewelry, a fine fur coat, and an additional $250 million. Could you imagine all that to this one lady?
That's insane. Can I get that?
Upon reaching adulthood, Doris utilized her vast fortune to explore a wide range of interests. She embarked on extensive travels around the world, immersing herself in different cultures and experiences. Additionally, she had a deep passion for the arts and pursued singing with Estelle Liebling, a renowned voice teacher in New York City, who also mentored the famous Beverly Sills. I don't know who that is, but anyways. During World War II, she worked in a canteen for sailors in Egypt and accepting a salary of $1 per year while she did that.
That's nice of her.
Yeah. So, fluent in French, she effortlessly. I'm like you with
Warwick.
We're struggling today.
Warwick.
Rhode Island's taking us out. So she communicated with others in different languages. And in 1945...
I, too, can speak French, but anyway.
Really?
Bonjour. No, I took 5 years of French.
Oh. You, I thought you were joking. You're like, bonjour.
No, I did take 5 years of French.
All right. I learned bonjour in... I was going to say, I learned bonjour in Beauty and the Beast.
Bonjour. No, yeah, I did. I can converse in French okay-ish. If I went to France, I wouldn't be left on the street.
Gotcha. So that's why it's important to know that it's important to know the key words. I don't know that much Spanish, but I learned the important one: agua, water, baño, bathroom.
El gato en mi pantalones. Tell me what that means.
I have no idea.
El gato en mi pantalones. It means there's a cat in my pants.
That's funny.
I didn't even take Spanish, but anyway, what else do you know?
And polio, chicken. That way I could at least get some chicken, the bathroom, and the water. That's all I need.
You're like, I'm good.
Just the threes. And I traveled to Mexico. But you know what? They spoke a lot of English when I got there. Anyways, in 1945, She embarked on a brief but impactful career as a foreign correspondent for the International News Service.
Why has this woman lived 14 lives?
You ain't heard nothing yet. She fearlessly reported from various war-torn cities across Europe, providing first-hand accounts of the aftermath of World War II. Following the war, she relocated to Paris and began writing for the prestigious magazine Harper's Bazaar.
Of course she did.
Showcasing her talents as a writer and a journalist. Then, while residing in Hawaii, Doris made history by becoming the first non-Hawaiian woman to embrace competitive surfing. Yeah.
This sounds made up. Is this
true, I promise.
This isn't a Reddit thread. This is a real
person. This is a real person.
This is not a real person.
Under the guidance of Duke Konamaku, I don't know, a renowned surfing champion and Olympic swimmer, as well as his brother, she honed the skill at the sport. Alongside her love of animals, particularly her cherished dogs and a pet camel, Doris also dedicated her later years into supporting wildlife refuge, displaying her unwavering commitment to conservation. But, Doris's fascination with horticulture led her to develop a close friendship with Lewis Brauman, a distinguished author and scientific farmer who later won a Pulitzer Prize. Bromfield's country home, Malabar Farm, which was located in Lucas, Ohio, became a significant part of their bond. So she had this really good friendship. But at the age of 46, it later led her to create Duke Gardens, a stunning public display garden dedicated to her father, James Buchanan Duke. She expanded the existing greenhouse at her residence in Duke Farms, New Jersey, drawing inspiration from the Horace Trumbauer Conservatory. I've never heard of that, but it's a conservatory. That's what she based it off of. Each of the 11 interconnected gardens was meticulously designed to represent different garden themes, countries, or historical periods, influenced by the beauty of DuPont's Longwood's Gardens. Duke personally oversaw the architectural, artistic, and botanical aspects of the display, drawing from her vast experiences during her travels around the world. She poured her heart and soul into the project, often putting in long hours of work, sometimes up to 16 hours a day, to ensure its success. Construction of the displays ended in 1958. So that was one of the things that she took. I'm just trying to give you guys a brief overview of who she was and all the things that she did. Like Sarah said, she's lived 14 lives.
She really has.
So apart from her passion for gardening, she had a deep love for music as well. She learned to play piano at a young age and developed a lifelong appreciation for jazz, forming friendships with jazz musicians along the way. She also had a fondness for gospel music and even sang in a gospel choir, showcasing her diverse musical interests and talents. In addition to her love for gardening and music, of course, we know she had a keen eye for art. She curated an extensive collection with a focus on Islamic and Southeast Asian art. And in 2014, a selection of 60 objects from her collection, including ceramics, textiles, paintings, tile panels, and architectural elements, were an exhibit at the University of Michigan. And then, let's see, and it's still there today, like, they still have some of it today. So today, her impressive art collection is open to the public at her former residence in Honolulu, Hawaii. So it's now known as the Doris Duke Foundation for Islamic Art. Okay, so now we're going to get into the other person, Eduardo Torella.
I hope he's lived as interesting of a life.
No, he did not. So, Eduardo Torella was born June 8, 1924 in Dover, New Jersey. And he was a talented actor at one point, recognized for his roles in films such as The Sandpiper, which was in 1965, and Don't Make Waves, which is in 1967. Unfortunately, though, his life was cut short, as we're going to later discuss. So, Torella's journey began when he enlisted in the Army in 1943, where he displayed bravery and earned a Bronze Star for his valor during the Battle of the Bulge. A Bulge?
Yeah, it's the Battle of the Bulge.
That's okay.
Yeah, you're
After
right.
returning home, he ventured into the entertainment industry, performing at clubs in New Jersey alongside legendary figures like Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, Sinatra was huge.
Right. So, showcasing his versatile talents, Terrell's career took a unique turn as he transitioned into overseeing hat production for Saks Fifth Avenue in Beverly Hills and
Say
designing
hat
home.
production?
Yes, hat
Like
production.
hats, like the things that go on
Like,
your head.
yeah, for Saks Fifth Avenue.
But he worked in hats.
Yes.
Okay.
He designed the hats for Saks Fifth Avenue and made sure they
Interesting.
were, I guess, production. I guess,
Nice.
yeah. Anyways, and then he also designed homes for prominent personalities like Elizabeth Taylor and Peggy
Wow.
Lee.
I went to school with a girl named Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still
But
friends with her on Facebook.
this guy knew the Elizabeth Taylor.
So do I. It's just not the same Elizabeth
Yeah.
Taylor.
So his collaboration began with Duke, with Doris Duke as an in-house designer and curator, which allowed him to immerse himself in the world of fine art, traveling extensively and then shaping the aesthetics for her property. So he originally met Doris while working on one of her homes. So after 10 years of working for her, though, Eduardo was exploring new horizons as a film set director. They were going to let him be a set
So
director.
he's already on like Life 5.
Yes, Life 5. Contributing his creative vision to movies featuring acclaimed actresses such as Sharon Tate and Claudia Cardinale. Cardinal. So we know who Sharon Tate is.
She was murdered.
Right. But despite his success, his decision to part ways with Doris and pursue other opportunities hinted at a potential turning point in his career. A decision that tragically would remain unfulfilled because he would never make it back.
I had a question. Have you ever seen a film that Sharon Tate was in?
I'm not.
I don't think I have either. I was just curious.
Yeah.
Her name gets thrown around all the time. Maybe we're just not
I
looking
think a
at the right
lot of, I
places,
don't
but I've
know.
never seen a movie with her in it.
I think she was like really like one of those up and coming, because, but I think it's mainly because who she was married to at the
She
time,
was married to Roman
Roman Polanski,
Polanski.
who was a very big, Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, I saw that movie when I was like 8 years old.
I did too. Kidding.
That's bad.
It's okay. So, are we ready for it?
No, but yeah, keep going. I'm
So,
intrigued.
October 6th, 1966, Eduardo made his way to Newport, Rhode Island, to have a crucial conversation with Doris at Rough Point, where she was currently residing. His decision to leave her employment was not taken lightly, especially after receiving warnings from friends who knew Doris well.
Oh goodness, Doris had an angry
Right.
streak, I'm sure.
So the next day, on October 7th, the estate staff witnessed a heated argument between Eduardo and Doris before they departed in a rented Dodge Polara. I don't even know what kind of car that is. I mean, I know what Dodge is, but we're going to have to see what this Polara is.
Bet you it's ugly.
This marked the beginning of a significant turning point in the life of Doris Duke, and unfortunately, it would be the end of Eduardo. That's a big old car.
It's a boat.
Yeah. So, the tragic incident that unfolded on that evening would definitely cast a shadow over Doris's reputation after this happened. The circumstances surrounding the death of her openly, he was openly gay confidant, an interior designer, shocked not only the elite circles of Rhode Island, but also captured the attention of the entire nation. Doris was known for her reclusive nature, but she then found herself at the center of a public scandal that would forever alter her legacy.
Did you know this is what the Dodge Charger is going to look like now?
Why?
Isn't it ugly?
It's ugly.
Yeah. Sorry.
So, in Duke's account of the events, she said that Eduardo, who had been driving, got out at the gates of the estate to open the gate. Okay. And he left the engine running, but had the parking brake engaged, and the transmission was in park. Duke moved from the passenger seat to the driver's seat. She said, in order to drive the car forward and pick him up once the gate was open. In order to do so, she released the parking brake and shifted into drive. But instead of putting her foot on the brake pedal, she hit the gas pedal.
Uh-oh.
The vehicle, she told police later, pinned Torella against the still opening gates, knocking them over, and then the car struck a tree. Eduardo was found trapped under the car on Bellevue Avenue and was pronounced dead of serious injuries right afterwards. So now, some people will say that he was alive when they got there. Some people will say he was dead when they got there. It's kind of one of those questionable things, and it'll all kind of make a little more sense here later on. So he was, like I said, he was pinned underneath the vehicle, but the sudden and fatal accident resulted in severe injuries to his spinal cord, lungs, and brain. So those were like the main things that were affected, like it affected spinal cord and everything. So basically, it did a number.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And this is all from being pinned between the car and the gate.
Gate, until it fell and over. Then the gate fell over and the car rolled, and it rolled him up underneath the car.
Yeah.
And then hit a tree.
And he was still stuck under the car?
Car. After
so it like tree. Dragged him?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness.
So the Newport police have concluded that the death was accidental after conducting a thorough investigation. However, upon re-examining the evidence at the scene, it became apparent that Doris's account of the incident did not align with all of the findings. And as a result, Eduardo's family decided to take legal action against her, filing a wrongful death suit. The court did rule in favor of the family and awarded them $75,000.
This is in 1966.
Yeah.
Which is not that much money.
Yeah. Initially, the family was granted an even larger sum, but with the assistance of her lawyers, the amount was reduced. So, eventually, after a five-year trial, Duke was found negligent, and what would be $473,000 is what they got, $473,000. That's what today's currency would be, but that was divided up amongst his eight siblings.
Why did his siblings get any? Didn't it just go to the parents or the kids?
I guess the parents just divided it up between them. But I don't think it said... It just said that his family... It didn't actually say that his parents did it.
Oh, okay.
So, I don't know. But we're going to fast forward to the year 2020. When Peter Nance, a Newport native and journalist, took it upon himself to reinvestigate the case. Having started his career at Newport Daily News shortly after the incident occurred, Lance published an article in Vanity Fair shedding new light on the matter. During his investigation, he encountered some obstacles as he discovered that crucial documents such as the police file and transcripts of the wrongful death suit were missing from the archives where they should have been stored. He did manage to locate some documents later on. But what he uncovered was quite alarming. It appeared that the initial investigation into Doris had been conducted hastily and was compromised by conflicting interests. For instance, it was revealed that Doris had hired the medical examiner as her personal physician just before he arrived at the hospital.
So obviously that was a conflict of interest.
Right. This many information she shared with him was protected by doctor-patient privilege. Raising question about the integrity of the investigation all the way around.
Wow.
It is worth noting that later biographies and obituaries of Doris continued to echo the official findings that the death was accidental. However, the revelations brought forth by Lance's investigation shed doubt on the accuracy of any of that. His Vanity Fair article exposed the flaws in the original investigation and highlighted the conflicts of interest that may have influenced the outcome. And some of the things revealed that in Duke's account of the incident itself, the evidence pointed towards Doris' story being inconsistent, as the parking brake could not have been released as she claimed. And that Torella's injuries indicated he was not trapped between the car and the gate. The deep grooves left by the car's rear tire suggest intentional acceleration rather than an accidental gas pedal press.
Wow.
Lance and other experts concluded that Doris likely ran over Eduardo over or ran him over in a fit of rage after he decided to leave her for Hollywood, leading to his tragic death just outside the gate. Following the resolution of the case, Duke surprised many by making significant contributions to the city of Newport as well.
Wow.
She funded the repair of Cliff Walk, a popular tourist spot near her estate, and donated a substantial amount to the hospital where she was treated after the accident. Additionally, she established the Newport Restoration Foundation, which focused on renovating colonial area buildings in the city. Many people feel like these weren't actually her just doing good deeds, that it was leading to rumors that it was blood money, basically, to influence the case's outcome, which makes sense. She didn't want to be, it sounds to me like she just flat out ran him over.
Yeah.
But,
Well, didn't he like just said that he didn't want to work for her anymore?
right. And that's what they
So,
were arguing about
yeah.
before they left.
I mean, but my point was is like if 2 + 2 is 4,
Right.
put it together.
Well, here's the rest of it. Are you ready for it? The aftermath of the incident also saw changes within the local law enforcement,
Oh, snap. We're
with the
not shocked.
police chief retiring to Florida.
We're not shocked.
And the detective who investigated the case took over as the chief of police. So this transition raised eyebrows, especially since the detective bypassed his superior for that position.
We're not surprised.
The community's skepticism about the handling of the case persisted, fueled by Dorsey's sudden charitable acts and the perceived favoritism within the police department. But the mystery surrounding Eduardo Torella's death and the subsequent events continue to be a topic of discussion in Newport to this day. So that is Doris Duke and the death of Eduardo Torella.
Wow, she killed him.
He never got charged
She
with
killed him.
anything.
I don't
She
care.
ran him over.
And she's
She was
dead.
mad.
And she's dead, so.
She's dead now. Yep.
She died in 1993 because I needed to Google and make sure she was real.
Yeah, she did. She died October 28th, 1993. I've got that in my note there. Anyways, that is it.
That's insane. She killed
That's
him.
she killed him.
There's no
Like,
way that she didn't. Like, even as an accident, like, why were you in the freaking seat?
she said, whoop, and just
Why
bam,
were you there? Like, why did you
bam.
move?
Right.
There was no need. And you knew that he was in front of the car. Why
Right.
did you? No. She did it.
She ran him over.
Oh, she 100% did. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. And she's dead now,
She
so it's
hit
okay
him like
now.
a curb.
That was
Like
insane.
trying to get through the McDonald's
And she
curb.
was like this, like, real prominent person. Like, why would you ever think that you could do something like that? And yeah, she wasn't charged, but like, why would you ever think that you could do something like that and not be in the spotlight?
Because,
Like, honey, your whole life is in the spotlight, whether it's a charitable act
ma'am.
or a job you're doing or a place that you've moved or a thing that you've built. Like, you're out there. That's
She's just
insane.
out here apparently running people over with cars. She said she hit him like a speed bump. Like,
She did bunk bunk.
because I
Anyway.
don't know how, yeah.
Wow.
So that's that
I
case.
also didn't believe that she was a real person, so she is, but it just sounded so far-fetched of all the
Yeah.
things that she was
I
doing.
promise you, I haven't found a case on Reddit yet.
No, one day.
One,
One day we
no.
should throw one in and not tell the other person
That's
and
funny.
just like make up a place for it or something
That's
and just be
funny.
like, by the
One
way,
day we
this
need to
entire
do
thing
some
was.
Reddit stories. Like I met a murderer. Murderer.
Murder. Yeah. Dude, that
So,
was insane.
like it's so
It started off so
far-fetched.
wholesome too.
Yeah.
Like there's this like
So if you
debutante
like
and
that story, that's going to kind of be like our Hollywood stuff that I'm going to be doing on
yeah.
Patreon. That's very similar. That's why I kind of chose that one as
We
well.
need name suggestions for that series over there as well, and
Yeah.
we'll take them from here. We don't really mind. Y'all should join the Patreon, but if you don't, we get it. The economy's rough. But yeah, that was
Wow.
insane. You could have just stopped with their lives and just told me like, yeah, that's it. And I'd be like, these are fake people.
They're fake, but no, she ran him down.
In an ugly car, nonetheless.
Like, I don't get, I just wonder why she was like, was she, I just wonder if she was like secretly like obsessed with him. I mean, he was gay, But that doesn't mean she still probably didn't have feelings for him, but she'd worked with him for 10
But
years.
I also wonder if it wasn't even a matter of that. I think it was just,
She wasn't getting her way and
yeah,
she's stomping her
she got
foot.
everything that she always wanted, and she was able to do whatever she wanted whenever she wanted. And now this person didn't want to work for her anymore, and
The
that
paper
was like a
princess did
dub.
not get her
Yeah,
way.
that was a dig for her. She didn't like the fact that somebody could actually control themselves, and she couldn't just say, "No, you work for me," or "No, you're doing this." Like, she couldn't.
Right. I
So I
mean,
wonder if
10
it was like an
years.
anger thing like that, like just a thing,
I don't
like
know.
stab the knife, like you, I feel stabbed in the back, I'm gonna off you.
Don't know. He was a very handsome looking man, though.
She looks like your typical vaudeville person, but she also looks like Bea Arthur from the Golden Girls, you know, Dorothy. She has like that resting bitch face.
Like, look at him. He was handsome.
Yeah. He reminds me of the guy that played Tony in West Side Story.
Like,
Oh, it was a station wagon too. It makes it even
yeah.
worse. It was an uglier version. Oh,
Anyways,
poor
that is
Eduardo.
it.
Oh, but guess what? I bet you he met her in the heavens or the hells. Maybe if your wrongdoer in life goes to hell, Jesus will give you a pass for a
You
hot
look at
second and you can
her.
go. Doesn't she look like Bea Arthur though? She just has that like stank face, which Bea Arthur was amazing, but
Yeah.
they just had that resting bitch face. But do you ever wonder that? Like if you are murdered or something, or you're
Murderer.
hurt and you pass away and you go to heaven, but your perpetrator eventually dies and they go to hell. I wonder if Jesus will give you a pass to go duke it out with them in hell just to, you know, get your payback and then come back.
I don't know, maybe you get to like televise, like watch it on TV happening.
Well, thank you so much for that. I appreciate it.
Oh, there's an even better picture. Like there's the
Ooh,
gates and see.
those are pretty gates. And she dragged him that far. Poor guy. Poor guy.
You know
That's
that hurt.
poor guy.
So anyways, that's Doris Duke and poor Eduardo.
Thank you so much.
I don't know
I'm
the
not yawning because I'm tired. I'm yawning because I'm yawning. I'm sorry, it's not
It's
you.
all good.
It's
So,
only 12:15 p.m., so I need to get
yep.
it together.
We'll be coming back at you next week from Georgia. We're going to
From
Hot
Georgia,
Atlanta.
Hotlanta. Mine does not take place in
Mine doesn't
Atlanta.
take place in Atlanta either. I'm just saying. You know, everybody knows Georgia for Atlanta and the Atlanta
The
brand.
ATL.
Right? My initials.
Yes, it is your initials. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. If y'all liked this, please consider following us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, or subscribe to our Patreon.
Whoop whoop.
Any parting words for the fans?
Lock your doors. And apparently, if you're gonna quit your job, don't go in a vehicle with the person.
Well, don't get out of the vehicle and let them get in
Right?
the driver's side.
Or, right, yeah. Well, I don't think you really do that now. You know, back in the day, it was like the big bench seats in the cars. They
Yeah,
don't
she
have them
just
anymore.
slid right over.
She said instead of sliding into the DM, she
Just
slid
slid
into the driver's seat. And
the DM, the DS, the driver's
she
seat.
took him out.
Yeah.
So anyways, just lock your doors and still don't play with Ouija boards. We're gonna keep that going.
Yeah, and as always, there's probably something sinister right in your own backyard.
Dun dun dun.